GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit JLTUS.com.
Welcome to GreenSense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Welcome. That's me, scientist, author, and environmental entrepreneur who will interview our guests today.
I'm Bob Kessler, our executive producer, the one working behind the scenes.
We explore environmental issues and meet the passionate people that are changing the world.
Yes, we do, but their ideas have to make common sense and economic sense in order to make it onto GreenSense.
And when I talk to them, I try to figure out why these ideas are good for the environment. Bob, what are we learning this week?
We have the March for Science coming up next weekend over Earth Day. Well, Cool Effect is working with them to help people offset any carbon they might be producing in traveling to the march. Also, they do some really interesting work.
All coming up on this week's edition of GreenSense. Green Sense begins with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, with some green automotive news. Welcome, Tom.
Hello, Robert.
Well, we cover a lot of topics, but we don't talk that much about fuel cells. And today we've got a car that uses a fuel cell. But I thought maybe we'd just give a little background for the audience on what a fuel cell is. So in simplest terms, fuel cells convert chemical energy from a fuel into electricity. Can you embellish upon that a little more and tell us how that relates to this Honda Clarity fuel cell car?
Yeah, Robert, that's exactly right. A fuel cell vehicle is just like an electric vehicle in that it is a zero emissions vehicle. On board the vehicle, no emissions are created to propel the vehicle. And as an electric vehicle, it still works using an electric motor through the wheels, just like something like a Chevy Bolt or a Nissan Leaf. The difference is, the electricity doesn't come from a wall outlet. The electricity comes through the fuel cell, which, as you mentioned, uses a chemical reaction to create electricity. In this case, that chemical reaction is hydrogen being introduced to oxygen in the presence of electricity. This creates water, which is completely clean, and introduces electricity to the motor to propel the vehicle.
So the challenge here, fuel cells sound great, but now you've got to get hydrogen into the car. And there's a shortage of, hydrogen, I should say it another way, there's not an ample supply of hydrogen outlets. So how do you get hydrogen into your car?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's one of the primary drawbacks of any hydrogen vehicle, including the Clarity. There are only 25 hydrogen fueling stations in the entire state of California, most of which are clustered around San Francisco and Los Angeles. So if you don't live near one of those stations, this isn't the vehicle for you.
And tell us a little bit about hydrogen. What does it cost?
Hydrogen is incredibly expensive, and that's one of the drawbacks of this vehicle. Hydrogen currently runs about $16 per kilogram, and a kilogram has the energy equivalent of roughly a gallon of gasoline. So you're paying $16.50 to move your vehicle a certain distance, or $2.50 to $3 for gasoline.
And how far can you drive a hydrogen fuel cell car on a kilogram of hydrogen?
The full tank, the full range, and this is five and a half kilograms of hydrogen, will move the Honda Clarity 366 miles, so about the range of a tank of gas.
But that's about 60 miles per kilogram, which is pretty good.
Yes, the EPA MPGE, and miles per gallon equivalent, is 67. In the Clarity. So it's very energy efficient once the energy is on board.
Except at $16 a kilogram, it doesn't make much economic sense.
No, it doesn't. It's actually for that reason that part of the deal when you lease a Clarity is that Honda will pay for your fuel for 3 years. So it's a 3-year lease, and you will be given a debit card, essentially good at all these 25 stations. So you're not paying for the fuel. Obviously, this is still in the experimental state because this isn't an economic model that's sustainable. But right now, Honda has this in place where you don't pay for your fuel.
Tom, why are we talking about this car? What do you like about it?
What I like about it is it's not range limited. That's one of the things that work. Also, Honda has, this is the second generation of the Clarity. Honda had the FCX Clarity on the market between 2000 and 2008. That had a shorter range, less power, and it was a little bit smaller. The new Clarity is bigger than a Honda Accord. It's a little bit quicker and has the greater range. And these are all pluses. And I think that even though it's still experimental, there are early adopters out in the California area who would love to be a part of this experiment.
And where do you see this fitting into our transportation arsenal?
I'm not convinced that hydrogen does. There are a lot of people that view the fuel cell differently, and that they view hydrogen as something that stores electricity much like a battery. And that's one argument for hydrogen. But on the other hand, hydrogen is typically fairly expensive to make, expensive in terms of energy consumption and in terms of dollars. There are two methods to do it. One of them, which produces a lot of heat and produces carbon dioxide, and the other one just uses a lot of electricity to create. So there's some question about how green a hydrogen vehicle really is. The car itself is zero emissions, but the process of creating or extracting the hydrogen is fairly dirty.
Well, what's nice about having the Guru of Gears on the show is we can explore all these technologies. And as we're in this Thomas and Edison phase of development and transforming transportation, we're never sure which ideas are going to be winners. So I really appreciate you bringing this up, Tom, and I look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
That's Tom Appel. Read his reviews and articles at consumerguide.com. We've provided a link in this week's show notes, and you can subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit greensensefarms.com. The March for Science is happening in Washington and cities around the globe next weekend on the 22nd, which is also Earth Day. The march celebrates and defends science at all levels, from local schools to federal agencies throughout the world. While there's strength in numbers, there's also a lot of carbon output for all those people who might travel long distances to participate in a march. Cool Effect is partnering with the March for Science to help offset the carbon output of travel. Here to tell us more is Marissa DeBelwa. Marissa, thanks for joining us on Green Sense.
Thank you, Robert.
Well, before we get started, let's go over some of the basics. Let's talk about carbon offset and how it works. According to Wikipedia, carbon offset is a reduction in emissions of carbon dioxide or greenhouse gases made to compensate for or to offset an emission made elsewhere. Anything you'd add to that?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so basically what you have to understand about carbon offsets is that everybody today is emitting carbon. So the average American emits 17 tons of carbon pollution every year. So even if you're making smart choices about how you live your life and you're trying to reduce your impact on the environment, you can't get to zero. Not if you're breathing, for example. We all breathe out carbon dioxide. So it makes sense to offset that remainder or even go beyond offsetting and you know, support a project somewhere in the world. There are many in the United States, many globally, where entrepreneurs are actively reducing carbon pollution.
So some say carbon offset credits are just a tax that charge you for you to use carbon. How do carbon offset credits minimize carbon inputs, and why are they good for the environment?
Well, so carbon credits are, first of all, it's voluntary. So it's not really a tax. It's for people who are concerned about climate change and the planet. And that's about, you know, it's more than half of the population of the United States, and certainly a lot of people around the globe. So people want to do this. They want to limit their impact on the environment, and they want to find solutions to climate change. So it's not, I mean, there is a discussion of a tax, but that's another matter, and that's for the government to decide. But it's a good thing, because we are heading towards a major problem in terms of the warming of the planet. And these supporting projects like these is a great way to reduce that warming.
How does carbon offset minimize carbon inputs, and why is it good for the environment? Walk us through that.
Okay, yeah. So carbon offset projects are projects around the world that are actively set up to reduce carbon. So, for example, one of the projects on the cooleffect.org platform is in Colorado, run by the Southern Ute Tribe. What they're doing is collecting the methane that naturally seeps out of coal beds there. So methane, as you may know, is 25 times more harmful than CO2. And by collecting it and turning it into energy, they are stopping the impact that methane would have on the planet.
So Cool Effects is really calls itself crowdfunding for climate change, and both of these are hot topics right now. Explain to us, you know, how this works.
So Cool Effect provides a platform for individuals to simply and immediately reduce carbon pollution. So as I mentioned, we offer a range of projects, and we allow individuals to come to cooleffect.org and support those projects. And this is new in the sense that these projects have been around for a while, but Cool Effect has really put them, a selected number of great projects together on the platform. And people can come and, you know, offset a footprint or choose a project that they think is doing good work and want to support and help that project meet its goal. So, I mean, what we do on at cooleffect.org is we're highly transparent. We offer detailed project descriptions, benefits and challenges of all the projects, due diligence materials, and we stand ready to answer any questions that our supporters might have. And then once somebody comes to cooleffect.org and funds a project, he or she gets regular updates on where that funding has gone and how the project has been able to continue its good work. So we give people the stories, but also the metrics of the projects.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Green Sense. I'm Robert Colangelo, and my guest is Marissa DeBella, who's with Cool Effects, and we're talking about carbon offset. Your website is set up like a crowdfunding website where you have a variety of projects to choose from, but you put things in terms of dollars per tons of carbon. Can you explain how that works?
Yes. So as I mentioned, each of us is putting a certain number of tons of carbon pollution into the atmosphere every year. So we have set up the crowdfunding site to allow each person to both reduce the tons that they, or offset the tons that they're putting into the atmosphere, while also helping a project meet its goal. So the goal of the project can be to reduce a certain number of tons, and our community comes together and tries to meet that goal and reduce that number of tons.
So let's say you're flying from Chicago to Washington, D.C. for the March for Science. Is there an easy way to calculate how many tons of carbon that my trip will put into the atmosphere?
Yeah, there are a number of websites out there that offer calculators. The one that we often use for flights is the International Civil Aviation Organization. And so Chicago to D.C. is probably about a quarter of a ton. So if you were to fly it four times, that would be a ton of carbon pollution that you'd want to offset.
And what are you doing for the march, and how are you offsetting carbon that's being produced from travel?
So we're allowing people to come to a dedicated page for the March for Science and to offset their travel and their participation in the march, because it's paramount that while, you know, we're out there fighting for the planet and for science, you know, we're not having a negative impact on the planet at the same time. So we have a simple website where people can come and immediately offset the impact of their participation in the march. And it's as little as, you know, it starts at $4.12 and that'll probably, that number works for most people coming to the march. If they give us, you know, $4.12, that's will go directly to a Vietnam project, and it'll help them offset their travel. And the Vietnam project is a great project. It's installs biogas digesters at family homes in Vietnam, which provides a source of clean energy. It reduces carbon. It also improves health of families because they use the animal waste instead of just having it lying around, or, you know, they use it to make clean energy. So it's a cleaner environment for the families. There's fewer health problems, and also a big impact on the planet.
Well, you're a new organization. Tell us a little bit about your business model and how you generate revenue to support your activities.
Yes. Yeah, so we're a nonprofit. And so the majority of our funding is covered by private foundations. What we do is we send just a little bit over 90% of the money that we receive directly to the project. So we do take a 9.87% fee, and that mostly goes to credit card charges and some other charges that are just transactional in nature. But we send over 90% of the donations directly to the projects. And that's our goal is really to fund these projects and to help these projects advance. But, you know, you mentioned that we're a new organization, and that's true. We launched a little bit over a year ago, but we already have about 130,000 people who've signed up and joined the community, and we've reduced over 15,000 tons of carbon pollution.
So you have a number of projects on your site. How do you pick projects to get on the site?
Well, we have a team of scientists who scours the globe looking for the best projects. The thing to understand about these carbon reduction projects is that there are over 10,000 of them. And it's not always easy, particularly for people who are looking to offset their emissions, to find the best projects. So we do the hard work for you. We do the due diligence. We spend months looking at the details, scientific and financial and organizational, of these projects. And we've currently got a list of 10 on the cooleffect.org platform. And we provide all the information that we've found. Some people want to, just know the basics. Other people want to get into the details. But the important thing is that, we stand behind these projects, and we're ready to, to tell you more information about the projects if you want, and we'll follow up with you about the projects. So that's how we do it. But it can get technical, so it's useful to have, someone like cooleffect.org out there, really finding the best projects.
So in summary, maybe you're an honest broker of information who's able to cull through all the reams of research and data and identify good projects that are really reducing carbon and greenhouse gases, and you become that intermediary between the funding and the project. Is that a good synopsis?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I mean, what we're trying to do at cooleffect.org is really, there are 145 million Americans who are actively concerned about climate change and who are already recycling. They are already, going to things like the March for Science. They're already standing up for their beliefs. But they want to do more. And so this is a simple and effective and transparent way to do more to help the environment.
That's Marissa DeBellois with Cool Effects joining us on GreenSense. This is Robert Colangelo reminding you to subscribe to the GreenSense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit greensensefarms.com. Are you familiar with the acronym GOMES? Greens, onions, mushrooms, berries, beans, and seeds? According to Joel Furman, MD with Huffington Post, these are the foods you should eat every day, and they should make up a significant portion of your diet. These foods can be effective at preventing chronic disease and promoting health and longevity. And there's a new study showing why mushrooms are both healthy and good for the planet. We're joined by Tina Eller, a mycologist with Phillips Mushroom Farms, to tell us more. Welcome, Tina.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we tend to think of mushrooms as a little side agreement that you put on a pizza or a pasta sauce, but they're quite nutritious. Tell us more.
That's a wonderful thing to bring up right out of the gate, because so often I get that question. Do mushrooms have any nutritional value? Mushrooms are great both for what they don't have and what they do have. So they're very low in calories. They're fat-free, of course, gluten-free, very low in sodium. But they're also the only source of vitamin D in the produce aisle, which is, I think a lot of people don't know. And they provide other really important nutrients like selenium, potassium, riboflavin, niacin, and much more. Another thing that's been a lot of buzz about recently, they contain almost uniquely in our food supply two powerhouse antioxidants, ergothionine and glutathione. They're also a great source of protein, and they contain, as their major structural component, chitin, which is a great prebiotic to feed the good bacteria in our guts. So yeah,
Tina,
mushrooms are so good for us.
You're a mycologist, and I could see you're using big words. So tell us, what is a mycologist?
A mycologist is essentially somebody who focuses on the entire kingdom of fungi. So although all mushrooms are fungi, not all fungi are mushrooms. It's a mushroom if you can pick it up and in your hand and see it. So a mycologist studies all fungi. I specialize in mushroom science.
Well, you've done a new study that shows how farming mushrooms is low on water usage, energy usage, and carbon emissions. Can you put that into context, and how does that compare with other crops?
We've always considered mushroom production to be an environmentally friendly crop, but we didn't have the actual numbers until now. And I think this is part of a larger study, and we'll be getting even more information. After all, as mushroom farmers, we are the premier recyclers. So we take agricultural waste, we compost them by growing a succession of microorganisms to make the perfect food for mushrooms. And then after we harvest them, all of that goes back into agriculture. So we're focusing on mushrooms. So we're looking inward and not trying to compare ourselves to other crops, because we share our plate. Man cannot live by mushrooms alone. Although Dr. Dalat, one of the major architects of the study, did note that our environmental impact is remarkably low compared with other agricultural products. But, you know, we're excited to have a baseline we can use for continuous improvement in the future. And we sort of, you know, we look at mushrooms as unique in the agricultural world, and we're not looking to compare ourselves with other crops.
So tell us a little bit about how mushrooms are grown and why they require less energy and water.
And that seems a little bit counterintuitive, right? Because when you think of mushrooms, you think they do contain quite a lot of water. But mushrooms, the vast majority of mushrooms that we find in the grocery store are grown indoors. So, and also, oddly enough, you mentioned vertical farming earlier. And we've been doing vertical farming for the last over 100 years. So we use the land footprint very efficiently. We're in a controlled environment, so we can control water usage and energy usage, and that sort of makes us unique in the world of agriculture.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Green Sense. I'm Robert Colangelo. My guest is Tina Eller. We're talking about mushrooms, why they're good for you and the environment, here on Green Sense. Tina, one of the issues that people sometimes connect to mushrooms is, you know, the disease or contamination that you may get up from eating bad mushrooms. Tell us a little bit about what you need to look for to make sure you're always eating fresh, healthy mushrooms.
Well, when you see mushrooms in the grocery store, you know, the cap should be minimally spotted. Some spots don't matter, but make sure that they don't look wet and slimy. And then when you get your mushrooms home, if you bought them in like a plastic overwrapped till, take them out of the plastic and put them in a paper bag, or there's even special cloth bags for holding mushrooms in your refrigerator. And then they'll continue to get dry and drier. They'll be fine to eat. So look for ones that aren't slimy and that smell good, that still smell like mushrooms.
One of the issues that you hear all the time as a cook is that you're not supposed to get mushrooms wet when you wash them. But there's oftentimes some type of dirt or a material that the mushrooms grow in. How are you supposed to prepare mushrooms before you cook them?
Well, I never wash mushrooms. I brush them off. So what you often see on mushrooms is what we call the casing soil. It's peat moss. You know, I don't mind eating a little bit of that either. But yeah, just brush them off and prepare them however you're going to use them.
And why is it that you don't want to wet them and wash them?
Well, they're fairly high in water already, and that just gives you more water to cook off, essentially. It's really not necessary, and it just, you know, doesn't enhance the flavor or texture of the mushrooms as they cook.
You mentioned that you grow vertically, and you use a lot less inputs so that mushrooms are a lot easier on the environment. Has mushroom production always been this efficient, or has something changed, or has there been a new technology that's allowed you to be more efficient in mushroom production?
Well, mushrooms, since the inception of growing in North America, have always been a vertical crop. So we have, you know, stacks of beds or trays in the mushroom houses. And I've talked to a lot of older mushroom growers, and I'm actually married to a mushroom grower. And, you know, they used to think it was a really good crop if they got 3 pounds a square foot for the older generation. The next generation was getting like 5 to 7. This most recent study showed that we're averaging 7.1 pounds per square foot. And some growers, you know, grow as much as 9 pounds per square foot. That makes us more efficient. But we've also come up with better composting technology, better water reuse. One thing I love to talk about, and I won't get too carried away, I love the whole composting process. But most compost yards have big tanks that they collect the runoff from the compost wharf, and we call that goody water, because that water is full of those over 30,000 organisms it takes to make good mushroom compost. So if you take that goody water and put it back on your wharf, you sort of can speed up your composting process. So that's just a few of the efficiencies and improvements that we've made through the years.
Do you have a favorite mushroom recipe?
Whew, that's a tough one. I can tell you that since, you know, we're surrounded by mushrooms, and since I'm in my field of work, I just get very excited about the nutritional quality of mushrooms. We put mushrooms in almost everything that we prepare for dinner. I love mushroom risotto. We always put mushrooms, of course, on pizza and in pasta sauce. Last night we made a nice chicken and white wine, lemon, caper, and mushroom sauce. So, boy, it would be hard for me to pick a favorite because we do try to eat some every day.
Mushrooms can range a lot in their variety as well as their pricing. Why is there such a range in mushroom pricing?
Some of the specialty mushrooms are just far more difficult to grow and take longer, and there's not as much supply on the marketplace. So I think those tend to be higher, like maitake. I don't know if you've ever had pom-pom mushrooms. They're a lovely mushroom that's been proven to be very good for your brain, for example.
Well, I need more of those.
More specialty, yeah, the more specialty varieties are harder to find and they are harder to grow. So they tend to be more expensive.
Well, in closing, tell us something that you think we should know about mushrooms that we may not know about them.
I think that we have a wonderful, valuable byproduct. So that we take agricultural products, we compost them. They were going to rot anyway. We control their rotting. We take off a wonderful crop of mushrooms. And then all of that wonderful spent mushroom compost goes back into agriculture, into potting soil, into green roofs. They're used for land reclamation. So I think from, I guess, cradle to grave is the term. Mushrooms are just a great thing to have on your dinner table.
Tina, thanks for sharing your love of mushrooms with me and our audience.
I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you so much.
That's Tina Eller, a mycologist with Phillips Mushrooms Farms, telling us about the environmental advantages of mushroom growing. I'm Robert Colangelo, reminding you to subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit greensensefarms.com. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Green Sense. Send me any comments or suggestions or ideas you may have about the show to robert@greensenseshow.com. We'll be back next week with...
You know, next week is Earth Day weekend. Next Saturday's Earth Day. We're going to talk to Hugh Seeley. He's down there in Grenada, the Caribbean island nation. He's gone before the UN to talk about how, you know, a lot of these countries like Grenada, little island nations, they're seeing the effects of climate change before anybody else. So we'll meet Hugh.
Well, Bob, every day is Earth Day here, and I look forward to talking to you because he's right in the middle of climate change. A lot of us just talk about it, but he's actually seeing his island nation change. So subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play by visiting greensensefarms.com and view the list of radio stations that air our show. Our goal is to be an honest broker of sustainable information so that you can make informed decisions. Stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.